Thank you, Doug, for leading us. And it's great to have those different prayers as well. It's really refreshing. And thank you for that. And those who've taken part tonight and put the effort into the work to make it enjoyable for us to come and worship this evening. Now, some things never change, like Faith Odyssey. So Jeremiah chapter 29, we are continuing our Faith Odyssey. And we are in Jeremiah chapter 29. As John read to us, he read the first 23 verses. We're just going to focus on one or two verses from this chapter. It's always good to remind ourselves of the future hope that we have as believers. We have a real hope for the future. We know that our ultimate destination is glory, that the sat-nav of our lives is programmed to end in heaven. That's the direction that we're traveling in. That's where, by the grace of God, we will one day be. And though we don't fully understand what it will be like there, in all its wonder and awesomeness, though there are many unknowns about it, yet surely we know it's a good place to be, and we can't wait. So we know that we look forward after this life to another life. There is life after death. And that provides us with real assurance and comfort now. When loved ones dies, we know that they're with the Lord and they're better off by far. And we actually say words like that, don't we? When a loved one in the Lord dies, so they're out of their suffering and their pain, and we can really mean it because it's true. And the hope of the resurrection, it thrills us and excites us to know that one day we will rise and meet the Lord in the air. And we preach the gospel like that. We say eternity awaits. Avoid hell. Get to heaven at all costs. So we believe firmly and strongly in life after death. We know that there is that reality. We're not sure about what it will be fully like, but we know it's there. If there's no resurrection, then we of all people are most miserable. But we believe there is a resurrection. So we've got this great future hope. Now that provides us, in many ways, with a present problem. There's a future hope, but a present problem. And the present problem is something like this. What do we do with our lives while we're waiting for eternity? Is the life that we've got now important in any way at all? Are we just in a kind of waiting room before we get to glory? Does our life now really matter in any way? Is the 60 seconds that make up a minute, the 60 minutes that make up an hour, the 24 hours that make up a day, the days that make up a month, the 12 months that make up a year, and the years that make up our lives, are they important? Is Christianity just about going to be with Jesus when we die? Is it just about life after death? Or is it about something now as well? Do we simply preach the gospel as a fire escape plan from hell? Or is there something that we can put into this life that makes it worth living? What's this life all about? Does Jesus make any difference to our life now? Does our work, our family, our home, our body, do they matter? Does cable TV matter? What about politics? What about iTunes, Facebook, YouTube, money, business, football, arts, education, cricket? I suppose cricket matters, but does it all matter? So the present problem we have, in the light of the future hope that we have, has to be grappled with. There's something awesome that's coming. But are we just living to die? Is it just life after death? Or can we speak about life before death? Well, for the Christian, they've got the best of both worlds. I really believe that Christianity is about life after death. But I just as firmly believe that Christianity is about life before death. That eternal life begins right now. and that we should be Christians who are both life-embracing and heavenward-looking. Now that, I believe, is what Jeremiah chapter 29 teaches us. It teaches us far more than this, but we're just going to focus on that one particular aspect of Jeremiah 29. It says that we should embrace all of life and at the same time look heavenwards. Jeremiah 29 is the text of a letter that Jeremiah sent to the exiles in Babylon. Judah, as we've seen in our Faith Odyssey, Judah was in exile there by Babylon. We'd seen in verse 4 that it was God's punishment upon them. It says, this is what the Lord Almighty, the God of Israel, says to all those I carried into exile from Jerusalem to Babylon. So it wasn't just the falling out events of the history. This was God's hand behind this. For God directs history always. And so he makes sure that the Israelites, because of their sin and their idolatry, they are carried off to Babylon. And God used an instrument for his punishment called King Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. And Babylon had come against Jerusalem in 586 BC. They'd smashed down the walls. They'd destroyed its temple. They'd carried off the sacred items. They'd burnt the houses of the Jews, and they'd taken tens of thousands into captivity. And Judah are in captivity in Babylon, and they're not happy there. They want to be back home. And there in Babylon, as one psalm puts it, they've hung their harps on the willows because they cannot sing the Lord's song in a strange land. So the people of God are in some place they don't want to be. They are in Babylon. They want to be in Israel. And in that situation, God says to Jeremiah, send my people in Babylon a letter. Jeremiah lived in Judah. Send my people in Babylon a letter. Now, we are familiar with the New Testament letters of the Apostle Paul and the Apostle Peter and the Apostle John. And we know that God speaks through letters to his people. Well, here is a letter in the Old Testament, just as much inspired as the New Testament epistles. And it's a letter from God through Jeremiah to the exiles in Babylon. And it is teaching us about being life-embracing, heavenward-looking people. Well, let's consider it. First of all, to the Israelites, they are told to embrace life, but look to the future. So look first of all then at verses 10 to 14. Verses 10 to 14. Is this echoing round? Is this the right height? Yeah, so Richard's gone up there for some reason. Yeah, okay, let's carry on. So verses 10 to 14, these contain for us really hopeful verses. And it says to the Israelites at that time that God has plans for them. So look at verse 11. For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. So for 70 years, they're going to be in Babylon. But while they're there, God is saying, I'm working so that one day you're going to return. Now that verse in Jeremiah 29 verse 11 is a kind of catch-all hope verse, isn't it? You might have received it on cards sent to you by Christians, baptismal cards, membership cards, all kinds of reasons why Christians actually give that verse out to others. Because it is a wonderful verse. God knows the plans that he has for us. Plans to give us a future. So that's what God does for us. There's a plan for future goodness. What does that plan consist of for the Israelites? Well, in verses 12 to 13, it's this. Verse 12. Then you will call upon me and come and pray to me, and I will listen to you. You will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. I will be found by you, declares the Lord, and I will bring you back from captivity. So God is going to do this. He's going to reverse their fortunes. And many times you read in the Psalms about when the Lord restored again the fortunes of his people. And that's nothing like sort of a fortune cookies, as the joke once was in a Chinese restaurant when somebody opened up the fortune cookie and it said, that was not chicken. Beside the point. But the whole idea of the Lord restoring the fortunes of Zion is not to bring them good fortune, but the idea of bringing them back to their land. So one day their walls would be built by Nehemiah. One day their houses would be rebuilt. Their temple would be rebuilt. And once again, the sound of rejoicing and dancing and tambourines would be heard at their festivities. So the Lord had established for them some wonderful festivals, Passover, tabernacles, and all sorts of festivals for them to rejoice. During the 70 years of captivity, that wasn't heard. But God is going to bring them back to Zion, and there's going to be dancing and singing and celebration once again. So God has great plans for his people. And God has got to bring his people back to Jerusalem and to Israel, because one day the Messiah is going to be born in Bethlehem. So they've got to come back there. And this is what God is going to do. So he's got a future hope for them. Now, until that day, as these Israelites are living in Babylon, what should their attitude be? Of course they're looking to come back to their homeland. But should they be miserable in Babylon? Should they mope around in Babylon? Should they say, well, let's just leave Babylon to rot because it's pagan and it's godless? Let's just leave Babylon to get on with it. Let's pray for the downfall of the pagan ruler of Babylon. Because Babylon was really pagan. It had all kinds of false gods. They're named in the Bibles, Marduk and Bel, and one of them was called Sin. So you've got these false gods of Babylon. So here were God's people living in a real pagan culture. And should they say to themselves, well, we're just going to sulk and mope around and be miserable while we're in this pagan culture? Or maybe shall we rebel against Babylon and the king and seek the downfall of the government? Or let's be non-cooperative and let's be totally disinterested in politics and business and culture and the rich tapestry of city life. Let's just ignore it all and get on with waiting for heaven. Or rather, the return to Jerusalem. Well, God tells them here in the text of this letter the attitude that they're to have as they await the return to their homeland. And it really is quite mind-blowing. Verses 5 to 7. Verse 5. Build houses and settle down. Plant gardens and eat what they produce. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so that they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. Also seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Now, when the exiles in Babylon read that, they probably had to scratch their heads. Really? But surely we are God's people. His holy people, and we're living in a pagan culture. Surely we should just long to be back to the homeland. And yet the Lord is telling us here to make the most of life in Babylon. He's actually telling us to embrace all of life in Babylon. Look at the constituent parts of it. God says to them, domestic life matters. Look at verse 5. Build houses, settle down. So design houses, build the houses, furnish those houses, get some nice stuff for your houses. Ezekiel, who was one of the exiles in Babylon, he built a house. He had a house there. And God is saying, do this. You're going to be there for 70 years. Build a house. Enjoy your house. And then he says at the end of verse 5, then plant a garden and also eat what it produces. So design the garden, make it beautiful, enjoy the produce. Domesticity, what a great word, and it's not a disinfectant. Domesticity matters. And what's more, in verse 6, God says that economic life matters. Verse 6. Marry and have sons and daughters. Now, this is still domestic life, actually. Well, it could be economy. Marry and have sons and daughters. Find wives for your sons and give your daughters in marriage so they too may have sons and daughters. Increase in number there. Do not decrease. And that goes back to the age-long promise to Abraham when God said to Abraham, I'm going to make so many people come from you and your descendants, you're not going to be able to count them. They're going to be like the stars in the sky and the sand on the seashore. And God says exactly the same to the exiles in Babylon. Have loads of kids, he says. Get married. Have parties at your marriage. And then do the stuff you do after marriage and have lots of children. That's what he says there. And enjoy it. Good. Well, verse 7. God also says that you're to have a concern for the city in which you live. Now, this is going to be the focus for the main part of this evening, but it's really quite remarkable. Verse 7, seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper. Economic life matters, political life matters. Embrace these things, seek the good of the city. Now, we're going to come back to that in a few seconds. But before we move on to the next point to come back to that, just see the balance here. God started off by saying to these exiles in Babylon, I'm going to bring you back to your homeland. I've got real hope and purpose for you for the future. It's going to be great. Look forward to the return. Meanwhile, while you are in Babylon, make the most of it. Enjoy life. Embrace life. I know it's pagan, but you can be God's people in a pagan culture. So embrace all of life while waiting for the return to the homeland. You see that great balance that God gives his people? So often we mix up that balance, we just don't get that balance at all. So often we can be saying, it's all about heaven, and we're just going to be so miserable down here until we get there. Otherwise, we could say, it's all about now, and I don't want to think about heaven too much. It's about both. But we have a real problem about keeping these things in tension. Martin Luther, that German reformer who had a great turn of phrase and wonderful illustrations, said this, that so often we are like drunken peasants trying to sit upon a mule. You put the peasant on, he goes over that side. You put him back on, he goes over that side. And that's what we're like in life. We can be all that side. Someone straightens her up and we're all that side. But God says, hold them both in balance. Enjoy life. Look forward to heaven. Now, just as that was said so for the Israelites then, all those hundreds of years ago, it is true for us today as well. Just as much. So there are very real parallels between us living in England today and the Israelites living in Babylon then. They lived in a pagan culture. We live in a pagan culture. They lived in a godless society. We live in a godless society. They were waiting to return. We are waiting for our homeland. And we've got a great homeland to go to. Philippians chapter 3, verse 20 says, our citizenship is in heaven. And we eagerly await a savior from there. So it's great to have that hope. How shall we live while we're waiting for that hope to be realized? Embrace life. Romans chapter 8 speaks about the glory that awaits us. It also speaks about the present groaning that we have while we wait for the glory that awaits. But we're not to let that groaning be the dominant note of our lives while we wait. But there's also scriptures that tell us about rejoice in the Lord always. I say it again, rejoice. And there are many scriptures as well that speak to us about getting on with life now while we have it. The New Testament speaks about life before death, not just life after death. Now, when you think about it, life is a wonderful thing. It's a great thing. I was telling the children in junior church this morning, we were doing a Nicodemus in junior church this morning and trying to learn about the second birth. It's a really hard concept to teach the children. So birthday parties are really nice. Why do you celebrate birthday parties, we asked them. Why do you celebrate it? Mind you, just actually, by the side, because it's the greatest quote I've ever heard in all my life. Okay, I was sitting in the back in junior church there, and Helen was doing her bit at the front, entertaining them. And then these three lads came in late, and they sort of sat down. And as they sat down, they saw me behind. They did a double take, you see, thinking, what's he doing there? And the gist of it was this. One of the little lads said to the other one, "It's Jesus." "He should be in the room with the parents." So, I have sudden real authority. It's crazy. Anyways, by the by, okay. So we are talking about parties. Why do they have birthday parties? And the answer is, of course, that parents can spend lots of money. No, the answer is, of course, they are parties to celebrate life. You celebrate life. Because life is a great thing. You think how hard people work to preserve life. You ever been stuck on a motorway for an hour or 2 hours as a helicopter flies overhead or as emergency vehicles race down the hard shoulders? What are they doing? They are working so hard to preserve lives from an accident. And in a sense, my 1 hour or 2 hours waiting on that motorway is totally irrelevant in the great scheme of things. Why do they work so hard to keep people alive? Because life is great. In intensive care units, in hospital, you see they have dedicated staff to each of the patients there. They're on the ball all the time. They're looking at charts. They're listening to those beeps. They're watching those lights. They're doing the machines. They're adjusting tubes. They're doing all kinds of things. Why? They're trying to keep people alive. Why? Because life is great. We have the survival instinct within us. Each of us wants to live. So I heard in a Tear Times magazine about a young teenage girl whose mother was really, really ill at some country in Africa. I can't remember which one now. But they lived many miles from the medical center. But this little girl, this young girl, she wanted to keep her mum alive. And the only way she could get her to the medical center was by putting her mum in a wheelbarrow and wheeling her for miles and miles and hours to get her to the medical center to keep her mum alive. Why do people go for miles to try and find water to stay alive? Why do we want to stay alive? Because life is great. Life really matters. If life didn't matter, then let's just die and go to heaven. God keeps us alive for a purpose. A man called George Whitefield once said, "We are immortal till our work is done," which states the obvious, I know, but it's a great thought. So while we are alive, we're to celebrate life. And as the emergency services battle to keep people alive, and as people have this survival instinct for their loved ones to keep them alive, what are we going to do as Christians with life? We're just going to throw it away or misuse it? You've got one life. Embrace all of life, not forgetting that something better is coming. Now, how can we embrace all of life? Because it's very easy to say we should enjoy life and embrace all of life, but it's very hard to actually do. How do you do it? Well, it's what Jeremiah says here in chapter 29, verse 7. So let's come back to this verse. Here's how we embrace life. Also, verse 7, "Seek the peace and prosperity of the city to which I have carried you into exile. Pray to the Lord for it, because if it prospers, you too will prosper." Now, the NIV has two words here, peace and prosperity. The Hebrew has one word, and it's the word shalom. And that word shalom can be translated in many different ways. It means health, it means peace, it means prosperity, it means well-being, it means welfare. It's a really positive concept. And what God is saying to the exiles is, look, seek the welfare of a pagan society. And some of us have got to do somersaults in our minds at this particular point. Don't write off a pagan society. Seek its good. Seek the peace and the prosperity and the shalom of the city. Why? Well, at the end of verse 7, because if it prospers, you will prosper. And it's the same word. If it has shalom, you will have shalom. The opposite is true, isn't it? If the city in which we live or the community in which we live is a total mess, then our lives are going to be a total mess. family life, and everything's going to be a mess. But if the city prospers, if things are good, then our lives will be good as well. How then do we seek the peace and prosperity of the city? Two things. Seek it, verse 7, and pray for it. Take the pray for it, first of all. Pray to the Lord for it. What? Pray for pagan rulers? Yes. Pray for those that worship idols that rule over us? Yes. We did that in our prayers tonight, didn't we? In fact, we should be doing that more often than we actually do. There are some Sundays that, you know, we go by and we don't pray for our rulers and our nations. We should be praying for our rulers. 1 Timothy chapter 2 says that we are to pray for kings and all those in authority that we might live quiet and peaceful lives. You see, so as we pray for them to prosper, so we will live quiet and peaceful lives. We will prosper. Yet there's real self-interest here, which doesn't seem like a Christian ethic. But there is. It is. You pray for them to prosper, and you will prosper. So pray for your rulers. Pray for local government and national government and any people in authority over us, publicly, privately. God says to Jeremiah, pray for them, for their prosperity, so that we can prosper as well. The second thing is this. Seek the peace and prosperity of the city, verse 7. Now, how do you do that? We know about prayer, but this is something else. This is actively seeking the peace and prosperity of the community and city we live in. How do we do that? Three things as we close by way of application. First, we seek the peace and prosperity of our city by doing our work well. Doing our work well. And we can embrace life as we embrace our work. Work is a good thing. Might not seem like it at times with the tensions and the decisions and whatever, but work is a good thing. Work, remember, has two values, an intrinsic value and an instrumental value. The intrinsic value is when you work, you're like God, because God is a worker. The instrumental value is work gets you money. And with money, oh, money's a great thing. You're not to love it, but boy, isn't it nice to have it. So with money, what can you do? Well, you can give away to the needy. You can pay your taxes for city life. You can pay to survive with the necessities. You can also have some nice things that you don't really need, but you can enjoy. And you can support gospel work as well. You can do no end of good things with money. And Christians are to have a really positive view about work. So later on, in the New Testament, the Thessalonians, they were learning about the return of Jesus. And they thought Jesus was going to come back like any day, any minute. And so they all gave up work. And the Apostle Paul had to write to them in 2 Thessalonians and chapter 3 and says, get back to work. Settle down and earn your living. Because if anyone does not work, they shall not eat. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 verse 13. So we are to work and embrace our work as we wait for the Lord to return. And as we embrace our work and as we do our work really well, we too will prosper. How does that happen? Well, suppose you work for a big company, a big business company. They do well. It's going to help the economy. Everyone will prosper. Recession doesn't help anybody, does it? I might be wrong on this, but I don't think the recession helps anyone. If the economy is good, everybody benefits. So if your company does well, you might wonder, what is the point of making all this money for the company? Listen, I have every point in it. Everyone else prospers eventually. Or you might be someone that works in a school. And you might think, well, okay, I work in a school. In a sense, it's a calling, but in a sense, it's hard work as well. But if my pupils prosper in my classroom, then I will prosper. Because the parents will be happy if their children are happy at school, and the parents won't get on to me. So I prosper if my children prosper, my pupils prosper, then I'll be okay. And the school will prosper as well. And the school will get a good reputation. So if your school prospers, if your class prospers, you will prosper. In a hospital, you work in a hospital maybe. if your patient's there, if you really look after them and everyone is looking after them in the right way, then the patients, though they might be very ill, nevertheless, you are making life as comfortable as possible for them, and the relatives who come along to visit will realize that, and they won't give you a hard time. But if they think you're not doing your job well and you're neglecting them, you're not going to prosper. Your work's going to be a headache. No, you look after them for their sake, but also you'll prosper. It can be true in any walk of life. Think of a nursing home. At the moment, one of our members, Douglas Wood, is in a nursing home. You know, he is in the best nursing home I've ever been to. Why? Not because of the building. The building is pretty ramshackle, really. But the staff there are brilliant. Never come across such good nursing home staff. It's, I get treated like royalty when I go in there. A cup of tea. I get taken into the office and told about his situation. And they've always got a smile. Always. So they open the front door and, oh, hello. They call me Pastor now. Hello, Pastor. Come on in. They're such lovely people. No, I don't know whether they're Christians or not, but they're such lovely people. And people in that nursing home, though perhaps rather not be there, are prospering, so the staff is prospering, so other people are prospering. Do you see the point of what we're getting at? What about shops? Shopping. Let's talk about shopping if we have to. Okay, shops. If you work in a shop, my sister works in a shop, and she loves clothes, shoes, you name it. My sister loves those kind of things. Someone has to, she does. And she works in a shop in Guildford, a clothes shop down there. And she absolutely loves selling clothes. She loves it. And she loves it when people come in and they're looking around and she sort of makes some kind of assessment about their colouring, their shape, and they're looking at something and she's thinking, no. So she will go along to them and advise them as nicely and politely as she can. Maybe that would be a little bit better for you. And the customers, they're really happy to be advised. In fact, my sister is so crazy about shopping and shops that on one occasion, this lady came into her shop and was looking around. So my sister goes up to her and says, there's actually nothing in this shop, the shop she works in. There's nothing in this shop that actually would suit you for the occasion you want. But I was in a shop the other day down over here, and there's something else that would really suit you. So come on, let's go. So she goes, she takes her to this next department, which is not her particular chain. And she says, this was gonna be a good dress for you. Be absolutely fine if the person who had come in wasn't working for the chain that she works for, just to make sure the staff are doing their job properly. My sister got into big trouble. But on the other hand, she prospered. Why? Because she loved what she was doing. Now, it's the same with anything, isn't it? If you really put your all into it, then you get a lot out of it. So work well. Work hard and embrace work. It's got intrinsic value and instrumental value. It's all for the Lord. And if your shop, your business, your hospital, your classroom prospers, you'll prosper. That's how it works. Two more things, and they can be said a bit quicker. We can also prosper and embrace all of life by giving ourselves to those things that improve life now. To improve life now. How can we improve life now? Should we? Should we just say, oh, Lord, take me to heaven? No, says God, settle down, make the city prosper, improve life. How can I improve life? Well, we can improve life locally and nationally. Locally, we can improve life by getting involved in our communities. Communities have things like the Safer Neighbourhood Teams, Neighbourhood Watch. There's lots of local voluntary stuff we can get involved in. And if your neighbourhood and community prospers, you will prosper. Think about it the other way round. If your community and neighbourhood is a really bad place, if crime is rife and it's unsafe to go out, your insurance premiums are going to rocket and your house prices are going to go down. You're not going to prosper. But if you're working for the good of your community, for the sake of your community, it's payback as well. You will prosper. If your community is not a safe place, People are afraid to go out at nights. On the other hand, if you're working to make your community a safe place, people will come to church in the evenings. If it prospers, you will prosper. What about nationally? Well, nationally, there's loads of great stuff going on. Take medical research. Medical research. If this world goes on for about another two or three generations, then there will be found cures to many of our major diseases and illnesses that kill people today. That will happen. The advances in science are fantastic. And that will happen one day. They will find a cure for cancer. They will find cures for so many killer diseases. They will do that. Maybe you could be involved in that. I know some of you are really clever people with qualifications after your name, or you're working towards qualifications. Maybe the Lord will call you into actually research for medical good. So often we think about medical research just as, oh, it does all bad things, doesn't it? And it got such a bad press. Tell you what, it can do wonderful things. And maybe the Lord will use you like that. Or maybe it is that you will be involved in politics. Be a great thing for Christians to be involved in. Very tricky thing for Christians to be involved in, but a great thing. So how can we prosper now and embrace life now? By seeking to improve life. Thirdly, we can prosper now and embrace life now by living the best life possible. Living the best life possible. Why does God give us his commands? God gives us his commands for us to enjoy life, not to ruin our lives. Bible commands are really positive things. Ten Commandments, they're really positive. The commands, we shan't turn to them, but Colossians chapter 3 gives us a list of commands to obey. And they're really good. And those commands are about how you avoid messing up life and how you can enhance life. And as we seek to live the best life possible, so it blesses other people and it blesses us as well. If it prospers, you too will prosper. So we've got to realize then that Christianity is not just about going to heaven when we die. It is that glorious. But it's about life on earth now, making the most of it, embracing it, and getting out of our mentality that the world is just going to burn to hell. And getting into our mentality, verses like Jeremiah 29, verse 7, saying, I'm going to seek to improve this world all I can. I'm going to do everything that's within me to seek the good of this city. I'm going to pray for this city. I'm going to work hard to make life so good. And I'm going to get out of my mind that silly remark that I am just a small fish in a big pond. You are not. Get the vision of Jesus in your mind. What he said about you. Listen. You are the light of the world. You are the salt of the earth. You're not a small fish in a big pond that whatever I do doesn't matter. Not make any difference anyway. You are light and salt. Powerful, positive things. That's what Jesus said you are. It's what the scriptures say we are. And that's what we must realize that we are. 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 8. Let's turn to it, and then we'll close. Because you might not have ever read this verse in this way before. 1 Timothy 4, verse 8. Okay, this is what it says. For physical training is of some value. Well, it really is. It really is. If physical training is a great thing, if you can do it. Okay, physical training is of some value. But godliness has value for all things. Listen. Holding promise for both the present life and the life to come. What a wonderful balance. we're not to be like that drunken peasant on the mule in Germany. This life, that life. It's this life and that life. And our godliness holds promise for this life now, as well as for the life to come. So this week, you go back to your domestic situation, your work situation, your voluntary situation, and you go back there knowing that you're going to seek its prosperity. For it is, if it prospers, you will prosper. But at the same time, knowing there's even something better coming. Well, let's sing.